From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy. This week we're broadcasting from the Argo Studios in a storm-pummeled New York City.
It's over.
Yes. Yep.
This is a day where half of the country is disappointed with the outcome.
This is not good.
This stuns me.
It sounds like a recipe for four more years of gridlock.
Wait, you thought the elections were over? Well, the results are in. But although most coverage is focused on the outcome of the presidential race, there were some significant results in state-level races. Most notably, a number of states affirming majority support for marriage equality and LGBT rights. On this week's show, we'll look at the results with Reverend Pat Bumgardner.
The nation, as you know, is at a critical point. At a time like this, we can't risk partisan bickering and political posturing. Our leaders have to reach across the aisle to do the people's work. And we citizens also have to rise to the occasion.
A highlight of Tuesday night's election coverage was Mitt Romney's simple, sincere, and patriotic call for unity in the election's aftermath. You know, it's going to take a lot to bring our divided nation together, both in Washington and all across the country. One of the most eloquent voices on the subject of unity and shared humanity that I know is the voice of Rabbi Irwin Kula. And later today on State of Belief Radio, Rabbi Kula will join me so we can search for that common ground together. But first,
there are 50% of the voting public who want stuff. They want things. And who is going to give them things? President Obama.
The president secured a second term thanks in part to building a massive ground game, coupled with an early investment in negative television ads defining Mitt Romney.
In the end, Mitt Romney was able to prove that he was a problem solver, but he was unable to prove that he understood their problems.
No one has been as generous with both his time and his considerable expertise throughout this prolonged election season, as has been George Washington Assistant Professor of Political Management Greg LaBelle. And I am very happy to have Greg with us once again, bringing both his academic credentials and the real-world experience of having worked on several presidential campaigns. Greg, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Hi, Welton. It's great to talk to you.
From helping us sort through the vagaries of the primary season to understanding the caucus system to traveling to Charlotte with us for the Democratic National Convention to unpacking the presidential debates, Greg, you've been with us every step of the way, and we have really benefited from your contributions.
Well, it's been a lot of fun, and I have to admit that I've learned a little bit along the way as well. So,
well, I know now you've had plenty of time to think about Tuesday's vote. So from your perspective, what happened?
I think a couple of things happened. First of all, we have to talk about mechanics. And I think what we saw was that the Obama ground game was, as a lot of us suspected, far superior to the ground game of the Romney campaign, the folks who were out there knocking on doors and making the phone calls.
Did you know that then, or you know that now?
I had a sense of it then. It seemed that the Romney folks were braying a little bit too much about what they could do. And I think just the basic mechanics of it, knowing that the Romney folks were struggling with a fairly long and drawn-out process of winning the nomination on the Republican side, which is not traditionally a kind of get-out-the-vote effort that it is on the Democratic side. Mm-hmm. While the Obama team had all of that time to get out there and identify and rebuild those, and I don't even want to say rebuild those networks, because what the Obama folks did was never let those networks go from 2008 until 2012. They continued to work them and nurture them, and so the odds were always that the Obama get out the vote operation and general ground game were going to be stronger.
So boots on the ground. I've been wanting to say that phrase.
Absolutely. And we saw it. I think that just the targeting was better. I think part of that was helped by the message. Somewhat of a surprise to me was the eventual centrality of some issues around women, particularly abortion, thanks to Murdoch and Aiken, who insisted on sort of making this a central issue in the campaign. And mm-hmm. I think that part of the message hurt the Romney campaign and probably helped with women voters on the Obama side.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a significant piece. But I think probably what's more important is that what this election shows us is that there is, in fact, a progressive coalition in this country. In many ways, I think the re-election of Barack Obama validates his election in 2008. No one can look at this now and say, well, that was just a little fluke and let's move on. The president's been reelected with a substantial lead in the Electoral College. Happily for him, he won the popular vote as well. I think that that was important in terms of the perceived legitimacy of the second term among some mm-hmm. in the country. That all has been validated by this reelection, and I think that's important as well.
Okay, now I want to go back to that phrase, progressive coalition.
Yep.
I have not perceived the progressives to be that organized. So what do you mean, progressive?
Well, I think the organization was sort of forced on progressives, and this is not unusual because groups do tend to sort of come together around particularly presidential elections, and they do tend to dissipate to some extent after that when the pressure's off or the focus is off. But we did see Hispanics and women and African Americans and unions, which is interesting too, particularly in Ohio and Pennsylvania and other places. We saw unions take on a stronger role than they have been perceived as having mm-hmm. Up until this election. This word obviously has been overused in the last couple of weeks, but there was a bit of a perfect storm in the sense that progressives did sort of all kind of come home mm-hmm. and end up working for and voting for President Obama on Tuesday.
What about the number of swing states that ended up in the Obama column?
That is exactly what brings me to some of these conclusions. I think that when you look at the race, there were two states that Obama won in 2008, and those being North Carolina and Indiana, are the only two states that he won in 2008 that he didn't win in 2012. I think that speaks to the breadth of this movement, this coalition that came together, and I think it's quite remarkable.
A lot of us were very concerned about the unprecedented amounts of money flowing into campaigns this year, both for the White House
right.
and for legislative offices. But now, Greg, it looks like some of those fears may have been unfounded. What did we learn about the limits of the power of campaign cash, or did we learn anything?
Well, you know, something that I said to people a number of times over the course of the campaign is that we know from past years of studies that there is a ceiling on what money can do. We've known that in congressional races and Senate races for a number of years. It's never really been tested in presidential races, and I suspect that maybe this year this was a first test of that, and we learned that there's a point at which more and more money doesn't make any difference. I have to admit that I posted on my Facebook page today the question whether or not the Koch brothers want some of their money back after you look at the results not only in the presidential level but in the Senate and in the House as well. That was a pretty lousy investment for the Koch brothers.
Listen, there's a lot more I want to talk with you about, Greg, and we're going to do that right after this break. Later in the show, I'll be talking with Reverend Pat Bumgardner, an LGBT activist, about some significant victories at the ballot box on Election Day. And Rabbi Irwin Kula will be here with some thoughts on coming together after the rancor and divisiveness of this hard-fought election. We'll be right back. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Welcome back, everyone, to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. My guest is our good friend Greg LaBelle of George Washington University. Greg, as someone who spent years working on presidential campaigns, do you see this as the Obama team doing more right or the Romney team doing more wrong? Or was it, as some commentators have suggested, Superstorm Sandy?
I think it's a little bit of both, and maybe both amplified by the storm. I don't subscribe to the theory that the storm is what made the difference. I think the storm may have sped up or amplified some things that were already happening. The thing we hear most often is that the storm stalled Romney's upward trend. The numbers show that the Romney trend, upward trend, had stalled before the storm hit. I think the remarkable piece of the storm, I think, was probably Governor Christie's near embrace mm-hmm. of President Obama for the immediacy of the federal government's help in New Jersey right after the storm. Mm-hmm. So I don't happen to subscribe to that. As I said, I think that the Obama campaign ran a close to flawless campaign. I mean, we're going to look back, and I think the biggest flaw we're going to remember in the campaign was the president's performance in the first mm-hmm. debate.
Yeah.
And I think the Romney campaign was probably less organized than they wanted us to realize that they were than they appeared to be. We may find that the Romney campaign looked a little bit more like Hillary Clinton's nomination campaign back in 2008 with some internal infighting and some very strange decisions along the way.
I see. Well, you've already mentioned Todd Akin and Richard Murdoch. It appears that candidates who tried their hardest to leverage moral issues didn't actually come out so well. Was this, and I don't want to overstate it, but was this election a victory over extremism, or can we put that much into it?
Well, I'd certainly like to think so, but I'm afraid that might be a little bit of an overstatement. It remains to be seen, but I expect that there will be a huge debate. Well, I don't expect, it's already begun within the Republican Party, and there are some folks of the Akin and Murdoch cut who will be making the argument that the Republicans didn't fail to win back the presidency in a year that they were quite sure that they would be able to do it, precisely because they abandoned those issues and Romney ended up spending time talking about just the economy and not and ending up his campaign really with an almost conciliatory sort of message, a moderate message. So, but there are others who will argue as strongly on the other side that it is in fact necessary for the Republican Party to move a little bit back to the center and to try to move away from some of that extremism. But that debate has yet has just begun and will take months and years before it's resolved within the party.
Greg, what about the unprecedented number of women that will be representing their constituents in the Senate?
Oh, it's remarkable, and you know, I as you know, I come from. I grew up in the state of New Hampshire, and New Hampshire has achieved an historic accomplishment in that on Tuesday night they elected their second woman as governor. There were already two women senators in New Hampshire, and the two Democratic women beat two Republican men for the House seat. So New Hampshire is now represented entirely by women. Which is a first in the history of the country. So I'm quite proud of them for that accomplishment. Clearly, women have come into their own. This was not presented as such, but this was definitely the year of the woman. Certainly, as we look at the Senate races, it was remarkable.
Were you surprised by Elizabeth Warren reclaiming Scott Brown's seat for the Democrats in Massachusetts?
I would have been not as it came down to the last week. I think as we saw again, I spend a lot of time looking at trends in polls the last couple of weeks before elections, and the trend suggested to me that she was probably going to beat him. The one that was more surprising was Tammy Baldwin's victory in her race. That seemed much tighter and had seemed to have a lot more sort of fluctuation in it. So that victory was a little bit more of a surprise, and I think for many people a very happy one.
Look, are we in for just more of the same, more gridlock, little movement toward bipartisanship?
It's been interesting listening to how the media has covered Speaker Boehner's comments after the election on Wednesday morning. There was some sense there that he wants to work with the president. I think the president, in his comments on Tuesday night, made reference to that as well. Harry Reid as well over on the Senate side did the same thing. I think the challenge here really is, the big challenge is for Speaker Boehner. Boehner has to decide, I think, whether he wants to embrace the role of leadership that now sits before him, or continue to do what he did over the last few years, which especially the last 2 years, which was to bow to the demands of a small caucus within the House of Representatives. There were these Tea Party folks. He needs to exercise some leadership there if he really wants his legacy to be one of bringing this country further along and helping to resolve some of these problems. I think that's going to be where this is really played out.
Now, you don't know this because you can't see me, but I have put on the hat of a Christian fundamentalist.
Okay.
And I want to make a statement about the campaign, and then I want you to respond to me.
Got it.
This election really does show the moral decline of America. Just look at the headlines. Same-sex marriage is being affirmed. Marijuana is being legalized. The secularists are just taking over. What do you say?
I think it shows something very different. I think it shows that there is a progressive movement in this country. To label that as moral decline is offensive to me, and I think that what it shows is that people in this country, voters in this country, are not sold on the idea that this country is or should be a theocracy, and decisions are being made by the government and by voters that reflect a moral belief that that's based on the fact that this is a pluralist society. I think it really says the opposite.
Thank you, Greg. One last question, quickly. Do you know how long it is to the Iowa caucuses?
No, but I better look it up and hold that date, so because we'll be talking, I hope.
Greg Lavelle is assistant professor of political management at George Washington University. He's worked on several presidential elections. It's invaluable for us to have that kind of expertise as we analyze the outcome of Tuesday's election. I guarantee you it will not be 4 years before you're on this program again. Greg, thanks as always for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Thanks, Walter. It's been a memorable journey with you once again. I've enjoyed it.
We've got to take another break now, but coming right up, Reverend Pat Bumgardner is going to be talking with us about a very big day for the LGBT community and those supporters of same-gender marriage. And then later in the show, coming together after a polarizing campaign season with Rabbi Irwin Kula. Just a reminder that there will be more of this conversation, like all of the interviews on this week's show. They're available online at stateofbelief.com. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio. This free State of Belief Radio podcast is brought to you by Interfaith Alliance, representing 185,000 members across the U.S., drawn from 75 different faith traditions. We're committed to protecting faith and freedom. Find out about the work we do to protect the boundaries between religion and government and unite diverse voices to challenge extremism and build common ground by visiting our website, interfaithalliance.org. Whether you care deeply about minority religious rights, school bullying, LGBT discrimination, the influence of religion on politics, or the influence of politics on religion, Interfaith Alliance is working on initiatives you'll want to support, Learn more and become a member at interfaithalliance.org. Welcome back, everyone, to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. The rights of LGBT Americans were put to a vote on Election Day as marriage equality appeared in various forms on ballots. We didn't wait for a popular vote to end segregation, did we? We didn't do it to protect women's rights. But anti-gay forces have somehow managed to position rights for sexual minorities as something that must be voted on. Yet despite the unfairness of this approach, Tuesday brought solid victories in a number of states. I am delighted to have with me someone who has been on State of Belief before. Reverend Pat Bumgardner is the senior pastor at Metropolitan Community Church in New York City, a lifetime LGBT activist and a leader in the city's human rights community. She's also executive director of the Global Justice Institute. Pat, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much.
What a gift voters in four different states gave you as you celebrate your 25th anniversary of pastoral ministry.
Absolutely. It's been a long fight. I think many people have been working for this basically their whole adult lifetimes. Mm-hmm. And to me, what it says is that we've turned a real corner here and that people, especially people of faith and people of goodwill, now get the connection between being a human being and being accorded equal rights across the board. And it's just very, very exciting.
Pat, this was the first time that a majority of voters actually supported marriage equality. And I'm wondering how much of that was successful organizing and how much does this reflect a fundamental shift in voters' attitudes toward the issue?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, but here's where the organizing comes in. I think what we're seeing here is the result of long-term efforts. So while we could and certainly should praise the organizers on the ground in Maryland, in Washington State, in Maine, in Minnesota, we should also realize that people in other parts of the country have laid the groundwork for this by organizing people to tell their stories, organizing people to talk to their neighbors, organizing people to talk to their coworkers. The truth behind this election is that now it's far more likely, for example, for people of faith to support marriage equality because of their faith than it is for them to oppose it because of their faith. And that represents long-term efforts.
Well, Pat, you are an organizer yourself. You're an activist. As you look at this, what lessons are you taking away from this experience that you would commend to other activists and organizers as important in doing their work on this issue?
Well, I think one great lesson is never, ever give up. And even if you've gotten a no vote before, do it again. You know, just do it and do it and do it until justice prevails. So that, to me, that's the big lesson across the board with all human rights movements. The other big lesson, I think, that it took LGBT human rights organizers a long time to get under our belt is that we need all the different aspects of the community and all the different approaches. So, for example, while this is a civil right, it's very important to engage the religious community. So I think those two lessons are very important.
In addition to unprecedented votes in favor of marriage equality, history was made Tuesday night when a Midwestern state elected Tammy Baldwin, the first lesbian woman going to the United States Senate. How significant is that?
I think it's highly significant because, I think what it reflects is this long-term effort on the ground of people really pounding the pavement with the message that we are human beings, like everybody else. And who you're attracted to in terms of sexual attraction or sexual orientation doesn't change the fundamental values by which you live your life or the fundamental talents you bring to something like governing a nation or representing a community. So I think it's highly significant that in a part of the country where people are largely regarded as conservative, that that type of breakthrough has happened.
You know, Pat, I hear some people say, boy, this movement is gaining ground awful fast. And I know that people like you, I know my feelings are that it has been a long time coming.
Yeah.
But I wonder if you also agree with me, because it is my feeling, that we have turned a corner and they were not going to take any steps back.
That's my feeling. And I say that not only because of the marriage equality wins, but because of what we saw in the presidential election. I had my faith in the ability of people to see past short-term, immediate needs, which are oftentimes very important, I'm not diminishing them, to the long-term picture of what will restore what I think is the founding vision of this country, that everybody's on equal footing.
Reverend Pat Bumgardner is the senior pastor at Metropolitan Community Church in New York City. She's a lifetime LGBT activist, a leader in New York City's human rights community. She's also executive director of the Global Justice Institute. It's always good to talk with you on State of Belief, and congratulations on 25 years of pastoral ministry.
Thank you so much.
Time for another quick break, and then we'll look for some hope for healing and reconciliation after an especially contentious campaign season with Rabbi Irwin Kula. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Please don't go away. We'll be right back.
Just
welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. Across the years, I've had some terrific conversations on the air and off with Rabbi Irwin Kula, president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership. As even Mitt Romney said in his concession speech, it is essential that we now all come together for the common good. But that's much easier said than done. How do we do it? When I thought about that question, Rabbi Irwin Kula came to mind. I'm confident that he has some insightful thoughts on this. Irwin Kula joins us right now. Irwin, thanks for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Hi, thank you so much. Good to be here.
What thoughts do you have on this starkly divided nation just a few days after a national election?
Well, I think the first reaction, and the kind of common reaction, is, you know, America is a great country. The you know, we have an election and democracy works, and I think the way Mitt Romney responded was, you know, the very best of how America responds. And many people voted, people waited online, I mean, you know, for hours and hours. So first is to say, you know, democracy does work. Mm-hmm. And I think that affirming that is very, very important. The next thing is that it's always important for winners and losers to understand that you never win as much as you think when you win. And so for winners, it's really, really important to be humble. Because as much as we won, or as much as those of us on the more liberal or progressive side won, the country's very, very split. And, you know, it was 50%, 50%. 2 million votes of 120 million votes is not so much. And if you look at red and blue, you know, we're a pretty split country on a lot of issues. And so I would say for the winners, they have to be humble. And what losers have to do is they have to not be angry if winners have to be not triumphant, losers have to not be angry, but they have to self-reflect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Republican Party really does have to self-reflect for the good of the country, not only for the good of the party. It's very, very, very bad for the country to have a party that can't get any minority votes, that can't get single women votes, that can't get gay and lesbian votes, a party that really is a piece of it is really almost lunacy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's very bad for the country.
Yeah.
Especially since the country still, 35% of Americans who walked out of the polls, walked out of the voting booths, claim they're conservative. Which means the country, people feel that they're conservative and at the same time want more social tolerance, want more diversity. And I think that in some ways the people are healthier than the politicians. They are able to put together things that politicians don't. You can actually be conservative and be socially tolerant. You can be conservative and have conservative values and have a diverse population. And that putting together is actually what we need.
Erwin, as you said that, I have felt deeply that a huge majority of Americans long for less divisiveness. I hear it over and over. There is a political reason to feed divisiveness, so the messaging that sets us one against the other isn't likely to go away. So how do we inoculate ourselves against those that we don't like and come together in spite of their positions on policy that contradict our positions on policy?
I mean, there's no shortcut for this. This takes practice by people. Politicians are not going to lead us on this. I mean, even with Obama's great speech, the chances of him going in there and actually being able to effect very significant compromise and nonpartisanship are very, very difficult. The real issue is, and it's going to take time, is whether people on the ground can begin to develop practices that evoke and nurture a new political imagination. And here's what I mean by a practice. Okay? We know that if you're a Republican right now, the right-wing media is leading the party. Okay, now, media can't lead a party. Politicians have to lead their party.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched what happened. I'm not a Republican, but we watched what happened. That five or six major media people in the right-wing media developed actually the language that Mitt Romney was forced to use, which forced the party and forced Mitt Romney as the presidential candidate more and more to the right. And that was bad for the country. So we're going to have to say, you know what, we're not going to turn on this media. We're going to have media fasts on this. When we feel our anger being stoked, when we feel that kind of adrenaline rush of being right, 100% right, we have to be aware that that is actually toxic to the culture. And we have to turn it off. And if we don't turn it off and instead get off on it, then this will continue. This is not going to be led by politicians down. This is going to be led by people up.
Erwin, okay, I agree with you. I also know from experience that someone listening to this show who disagrees with you politically will say, well, it's very easy for you to say that because your candidate won and you got what you wanted and the rest of us feel like we got cheated. And so you're just saying that because...
Well, the truth is our candidate, we didn't win. And I think the Democrats need to be very careful about what it means to win. Right, the government is in the exact same place it was. We have a few more senators, but still not filibuster-proof. So we have a very, very split government, and some of the Congress people that got into on the House of Representatives are actually amongst the most right-wing Republicans. And so we won, but didn't win what we think we won. And if we're triumphant about that, that'll be a problem. And the winners always have to be more magnanimous than the losers. Now, the losers have another issue, and the Republican Party needs a fight between its center-right and its hard-right, and it needs to have that fight. But we can't have that fight for them. They have to have that fight, and really, it hopefully won't be a bloodbath, but it is a little bit of a civil war.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important to have hard-right and hard-left, but it's very important not to govern from hard-right and hard-left.
Mm-hmm.
Hard-left give pure positions that help people in the middle assess what to do. But you can't govern from that place. And what we have to do is we have to put the hard right back where it belongs, on the margins, on the edge, just like in many ways Obama did to the hard left.
Mm-hmm.
And many of us who were left of Obama were disappointed in parts of the presidency. But what we got was health care, in which an extra 30 million people at least got health care. We got a little bit of financial regulation. We got some insurance regulation. We got an auto bailout. We got the beginnings, at least, of some immigration talk with the DREAM Act. So part of what a center-right, center-left does is it holds its own sides, its own extreme accountable. My job is not to hold the hard-right accountable. My job is to hold the hard-left accountable so we can get things done in a political culture that calls for compromise.
So did you see anything in the Americans' vote that gave you signs of hope in this regard?
Yes, I'll give two things. One, I think that the fact that those Republican senators who were crazy, okay, it is the things said about rape, those, they were out of control. And that in Republican states, Democratic senators got elected at the same time that Romney won the presidential vote. That means people split their ticket because they knew something was wrong. That's the beginning of the correction, right, of people's own party. So I think that was important. I also think it was very interesting that Obama got more religious vote than was expected. He got the Catholic vote, he got the Jewish vote, and he got, obviously, the liberal Protestant vote. The only vote he didn't get was the evangelical Protestant vote and the fundamentalist evangelical Protestant vote, and Romney got less of that, not probably because he was a Mormon, but still he got less of it. And what we've been talking about for the last 20 years is the more religious you are, the less likely you were to vote Democratic. And I think there's something about that that's going to be healthy, too, because we have too many splits in the country. It's not simply right-left, but on every social issue, it's right-left. On taxes, it's right-left. On spending, it's right-left. And on religion, it's right-left. So you have too many places where the split is very, very hard between the right and left. We need some mixing and blending there. So I think that was very hopeful. And finally, the last thing that's hopeful, I think that the Southern strategy is over. I mean, for the Republicans, and I understand maybe not for Karl Rove, but the Southern strategy of basically playing to the worst element of a white population to be able to get enough electoral votes is over, and that's good. That's going to force the Republican Party to think about how are they going to include Hispanics in that.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to say things like self-deportment anymore, and we'll begin to get some kind of immigration reform that'll be the right kind of immigration reform. And last, the next generation. I think that the next generation did vote, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Next generation, I mean people under 32, they did vote. And I think that for many of them, they're more pragmatic than ideological. They understand climate change is real, but they also know we have to have some market-based approaches. I think that they do understand that we need humane immigration reform, but they're not ideological one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They know we need some social tolerance for gays and lesbians because they meet them in their families and in their workplace. Places and in the army, and so they're past a lot of these debates, and that's going to be very healthy over the next, you know, decade or two.
Rabbi Irwin Kula is president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership, a past recipient of the Interfaith Alliance Faith and Freedom Award. His books include Yearnings, Embracing the Sacred Messiness of Life. Irwin, as always, great thanks for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Please visit us online at stateofbelief.com to find out more about the show, hear extended interviews, read transcripts, sign up for our podcast. You can learn about the new State of Belief app for iPhone and Android devices, and then you can listen to us anywhere, anytime. Please share your thoughts on what you've heard on Facebook and Twitter. Contact information is available at stateofbelief.com, including the toll-free listener line, 800-856-0277. We encourage you to tell others about State of Belief Radio and encourage them to listen also. It seems to me it's time for some quiet conversations now. Quiet conversations about very important issues. Tell them what you've been hearing on this show. Bring them into the conversation. Then maybe they will contribute to the national conversation as well. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. Join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see,